And that's the new national anthem of South Sudan. Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. I'm speaking with Susan Purdon, who's the country director for Southern Sudan for the International Rescue Committee. And Susan, amid all of the celebrations in Southern Sudan on the occasion of its independence, I take it that the challenges ahead for this country are pretty daunting.
They are indeed. And it's been a very exhilarating week and culminating with the jubilation yesterday, kind of a jubilation in Juba, if you'll forgive the pun, but really a wonderful occasion, and I was lucky enough to have a ticket to see the ceremony, so it was very exciting to be there among all the thousands of people celebrating and weeping and just joyously happy. But as you say, there's a real challenge ahead for this new baby country. Although the people here, the officials here say, you know, they've been working as a government for 5 years, so it's not completely new to them. But still, with the history of conflict for so many years, there are many, many problems that need to be addressed.
Well, according to reports that I've seen, Susan Purdon, that at the celebrations that you witnessed, where African heads of states came by in their motorcades, included in the procession was the motorcade with General Bashir from the north, who's indicted by the International Criminal Court and has been persecuting the south, yet he got an enormous cheer from the crowd.
He did get recognition as their head of state. There are lots of mixed emotions for people. They do have a history of having been part of this country. And I think that one could interpret the emotion of the crowd as happy to see him come and acknowledge that they are independent. So there was a lot of conversation in Juba upcoming and leading up to yesterday, trying to decide if he was coming and if he wasn't coming and whether it was better if he came or not. But I think at the end, the people really appreciated the fact that he is a head of state and he did come forward to say he welcomed South Sudan as an independent country and acknowledged the importance of having a peaceful relationship and moving forward, understanding that they have a common history. So, yeah, there are lots of mixed things going on here at the time.
Well, the fundamental situation in terms of the new country's viability is that the oil largely exploited by the Chinese is in the south, in this new country, but the pipelines to get it to the market are in the north. And there have been skirmishes and battles over Abyei, the region on the border, and quite a bit of bombing, I take it, in the mountains as well. So where does the military situation stand, even though we've had this celebration yesterday? The fighting is barely over, and it's certainly nobody could suggest that there's a real peace.
Absolutely, and there are many issues along the length of the border that remain unresolved. It's one of the biggest concerns following the six-year period of the Comprehensive Peace Agreement, where those issues were supposed to have been resolved before the referendum on separation, which was held in January. But in fact, the concerns persist to this day. So Abyei erupted in violence in May this year, and a few weeks ago there was an agreement to cease fire with Ethiopian troops coming in to try to maintain the peace while the two sides continue to negotiate with international mediators to come to an agreement on the border, which continues along beyond Abyei to South Kordofan and Blue Nile. All of those are called the three areas, which remain unresolved as far as border dispute and sovereignty. So, and those areas in particular, Abyei and South Kordofan, and the state that has become part of the new South Sudan Unity State, all are the areas where the oil fields lie. And the decision on sharing the revenue from the oil is another one that's unresolved. during the period of the peace agreement, it was 50-50, the split from the money that was gained from the sale of the oil. Even the oil that was pumped from the south through the pipeline to the north, when the north sold the oil, it was the Khartoum government, it was one country, the half of the revenue from that was destined to support the government of the south. Right now, I haven't heard that there's been an agreement reached, and everyone is waiting to see how that turns out. There are talks about, a 60-40, a 50-50 split. Who knows what the final agreement is going to be. But there's definitely that interdependence between what's now the Republic of Sudan and the Republic of South Sudan, that the oil fields lie in the south and the pipeline lies in the north.
Again, I'm speaking with Susan Purdon, who is the country director for Southern Sudan for the International Rescue Committee, and we're talking to she's in Juba, the capital of this brand new country, South Sudan. In many ways, it would seem that one would have to credit former President George W. Bush, who in 2005 put the warring groups together, the Southern Rebels and the government in Khartoum, and came up with this agreement, which is the basis for this, which then had a referendum and now has resulted in a new country. And I take it that the new president of South Sudan, Salva Kiir, wears a cowboy hat that George W. Bush gave him?
That's the legend. I don't know if it's the same hat or a replacement, but I have heard that George W. Bush gave him the cowboy hat. He definitely wears a black cowboy hat all the time. He wore it yesterday. And also in the U.S. delegation that attended the ceremonies yesterday, it was led by Susan Rice, the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, and she was with Colin Powell, who was, of course, a part of the George W. Bush administration at the time that peace was negotiated. So it was kind of an acknowledgement by President Obama of that contribution.
And do you think that it's a justified acknowledgement?
I do think that we have to recognize that the effort to bring resolution was supported a lot along the way during the period of the George W. Bush administration by a number of various groups in the U.S. and internationally who were in support of the a way forward that ended the decades of conflict that have affected South Sudan, and a way that allowed for justice and peace and liberty to become the situation for the people who had struggled for so long.
So do you
in
think
that justice, peace, and prosperity are the motto of the new of the Republic of South Sudan?
Well, those are high hopes, I take it, given the baseline from which this country is starting. How, though, do you deal with, or how does one deal with the bitterness in the north that they've lost half of their... it was the largest country in Africa, and now it's split largely in two, and the south, of course, is not only is where the oil is, it's also much more fertile, and the nomads would come down from the north.
That's true. But there has been a really difficult relationship between the north and the south, and of course the central government, the Khartoum government, and other marginalized portions of Sudan. So Darfur is still in the north, but also has problems, and the east of Sudan also has problems. What I hear from the people here in the south, and what we heard from the people on the stand at the celebration yesterday, is that the people of South Sudan feel liberated from an oppressive government structure that predates even the forming of the nation, even during colonial times. Even before colonial times, there was a marginalization of the peripheral parts of Sudan. So that struggle for freedom is very long-standing for the people of the South. At the same time, we saw images on TV from Khartoum of people in Khartoum saying, it's okay, it's, the split has come, there are fundamental differences between the two portions of the country, but we have a long history so that the people on the street are saying positive things about one another. It's, as I say, I keep saying, it's quite complicated and mixed. There are pros and cons on every issue, and positive and negative on every issue. But the people in the South are determined to enjoy the freedom and to maintain peace, and they'll work through the difficulties, whatever they may be.
Well, of course, the South fought a long guerrilla war, and its leader was apparently a very skillful guerrilla fighter who died somewhat mysteriously. I take it that in the North there are little glimmers of the Arab Spring, aren't there? It's not as if everybody in the North supports General Omar Bashir, the indicted war criminal.
There are definitely a variety of factions in the North and an opposition political party and group or other opposition, as well as a number of different rebel groups fighting against that government. So the Sudan, the North, or the remainder of Sudan, still has struggles internally. It's going to be interesting to see what evolves as far as Bashir in power and the future of the government of the North.
So in terms of the United States, given the extent to which the U.S. Helped bring about this situation, it is, I think, obviously a big deal, is it not, for a country to split itself in half, and it's not entirely clear whether the divorce will be amicable. But is there a danger that we will forget this place now and move on?
There has been concern that South Sudan reached the headlines in January with the referendum on independence, and again now with the achievement of independence, and a concern that, you know, it's the 15 minutes of fame that's soon to fade. But the international community has stated clearly an interest in supporting South Sudan to become a viable country and to support its development. One of the factors that people are dealing with here is from the legacy of decades of war. Now we have a new nation that's one of the least developed countries on Earth. And so the international community still has a responsibility to help support the development of systems, the development of economy, the strengthening of the ability for the government to control its borders, to have a secure country. It has to develop a fiduciary system and join the international community of nations. There are so many things that are on the agenda of this new government, and every international government has pledged its support for staying the course, doing what's necessary over a number of years to help keep stability, to help make sure basic services are available to people in the process of the transition to the responsibility of the government of South Sudan to provide all the services necessary to be an independent and independently functioning country. So the fact that it's so undeveloped or underdeveloped means that it needs some cushion right now. But the fact that it has oil wealth and a fertile land, a lot of land, a strong population that's looking for opportunity, I think means that this transition will happen, that the external support will reduce over time and the internal strength will continue to grow. We're three guarantors of the peace agreement, the U.S. government, the British government, and the Norwegian government, and they were all represented at the ceremony yesterday, and they continue to pledge support for the future of South Sudan.
Again, I'm speaking with Susan Purdon, who's the country director for Southern Sudan for the International Rescue Committee. But just on that issue of development and fertile land, my understanding, and I've interviewed a few people about this, is that there's a sort of a land grab going on in Africa now, not just with Chinese investment, but also American and British hedge funds, in the sense that they can buy up fertile land as a hedge against global warming in countries that whose agriculture is being adversely affected, that this is something that is going to be happening in the future, and that vast quantities of agricultural land are being gobbled up as quickly as possible. Is there any evidence of that happening in southern Sudan?
There is definitely evidence of that happening, and there was a report that describes a number of these very hedge fund land grabs in South Sudan. And again, this government is intelligent. The people in the government are intelligent and understand those things are happening, and they're trying to enact a new constitution and a set of laws that will create an environment where business and entrepreneurship can come and flourish, but also that will protect the country and the revenue streams so that the land grabs don't exploit and extract all of the value, but that there can be an opportunity for business to make money and for that business to provide support for the development of South Sudan. So it's a tricky thing right now because the reach of the government in control of the territories and implementation of the laws that exist is not as strong as it could be. So that's an area that is going to have to be corrected and quickly.
Just on a personal note, obviously it was a joyful day yesterday. Is there any kind of hangover today, or is there a sense of optimism?
It's been interesting to be in town today. You know, from Friday night at midnight, the celebrating started. There were horns honking and people out shouting and cheering. And Saturday was a huge event with the lowering of the Sudan flag and the raising of the South Sudan flag and visits of all the dignitaries. But it's a three-day holiday, so Saturday, Sunday, and Monday are holidays. And town today is very quiet. Families are celebrating. Communities in the rural areas are celebrating. But business as usual isn't happening. People are really reflecting and appreciating the moment and I think gearing up for the hard work ahead. On a personal note, I feel privileged to have been a witness. It was amazing. As you've pointed out several times, it's a big challenge moving forward. Most of our work is in the provision of basic services, health care for people in rural areas. And we are supported by donor government funds to do that, and we'll continue to do that. And our aim is to hand over that responsibility to the local government, to the county health department, as they come online, as their systems develop, as they get stronger, and then we'll work ourselves out of work, I hope.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Susan Purdon. Again, Susan Purdon.
Thank you.
Is the country director for South Sudan for the International Rescue Committee, and we spoke to her. She is in Juba, the capital of this new country, South Sudan. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back in a moment.
Oh, push, arise and shine, raise your flag with the guiding star, and sing a song of freedom with joy. Forevermore reign, so Lord bless South Sudan, so Lord bless South Sudan.